Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. Great episode this week. We have Alex Sulkin on. You may not recognize the name, but you know his work. He has been a showrunner and one of the head writers of Family Guy for the past 14 or 15 years, I think. Super cool dude. Got to ask him every Family Guy question I've ever wanted to ask. Bill Schultz steps in as my co-host on this episode. Don't forget, we do the show every single Wednesday and Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. All we care about is that you share it, spread the love, let people know about it. But if you want to subscribe, we're running a special right now at Gas Digital Network. Use the code SDR30. You get a 30-day free trial as opposed to the normal 7-day. Or sign up for 2 years, and you are going to get 30% off. And I think an extra month free, it's a good deal over at Gas Digital Network. But really, just share the show. Tell people about it. Get people to listen. November and December, the two best months, it seems like, we have ever had on this show. Here it is right now, the Alex Sulkin episode of The SDR.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I'm beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me for the first time in a while with a better working microphone, thanks to me, it is Bill Schultz. How are you, buddy?
Thanks to you. I have a better microphone. You worked diligently for 2 minutes on it in our green room. Thank you.
It really shows me how most people are like technologically moronic, that it took me 12 seconds to fix. Shannon in her ever increasingly purple room in doing the podcast video.
I need my fire green and the tree is green. Up. Yeah.
Okay. It's very nice. Well, it is. You're allowed now. It's after Thanksgiving, so you can put it up. So right now, I'm going to give this guy the proper introduction. He's been with the show Family Guy since 2004, showrunner since 2016, writer, producer, voice actor for Family Guy and on The Cleveland Show when it aired, co-wrote Ted as well. He is the co-host of the Typical Disgusting Display podcast with Julia Sharp and Janice Cruz Brooks as well. So good to meet you. It is Alex Sulkin. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Wow, that was a mouthful there. And I could not tell that you were reading at all.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, let me say this. To be honest with you, first of all, any girl that I've dated in the past 10 years, right?
Yeah.
They will agree to this. Family Guy, American Dad, or Cleveland Show is pretty much running in my house 24/7.
Wow.
Probably 24. Shannon, you used to be here all the time. All the time. Playing in the background. I just, that's like my at peace like music kind of. Just helps me.
I totally get that. Like, not Family Guy necessarily, but I'm that way with like Law and Order.
I used to be Law and Order. Yeah. Family Guy replaced it somehow. Used to be Law and Order. Now it's always Family Guy.
Oh gosh. I'm stuck in the Law and Order spin cycle. I sometimes go to Columbo.
Oh really? No, Columbo. Where are you finding that in 1987 channels?
Like, nice. Yes, I was going to say I'm older. It's on Peacock, my friends.
People that worship Columbo, and most of them have very good taste. I don't think I've ever seen an episode. I'm aware of what Columbo is, but a lot of people, that is like Columbo's a jam.
Yeah, Columbo will reel you in, much like he reels in the murder episode after episode. Like Peter Falk gives such an unbelievably nuanced performance. And you'd think in your mind, like, okay, this was also at the same time that like Sanford and Son was happening. So it's like for him to act the way he did, which was so natural and subtle, it was like having 70s film on TV, which is.
And he was the first one to make it like he didn't really know what was going on and then go, but hang on a second. Like that, he was the guy that brought that out, or that show was the first to do that.
Yeah, he basically invented the detective rope-a-dope.
Yeah,
the murderer always thought that they had the upper hand and who's this bumbling idiot. And then there's a point in every Columbo, and it's usually a little more than halfway through, where they end a scene with a very dramatic shot of like the murderer, say it's like John Cassavetes or something, watching Columbo leave, and he has an expression on his face like, fuck, this guy's good. Like, I've been duped.
It's great. You painted a good picture. I'm going to have to check out this Columbo you speak of.
Yeah.
I wonder. Well, we're going to first talk about the podcast. I know it's kind of like a pandemic baby, but before we get into it, you have over 500,000 Twitter followers, which is a pretty substantial amount, but like 14,000 on Instagram.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because people find you funny but off-putting to look at?
Oh, well, please. I'm the first one in that line. That's a great question, by the way. And I 1,000%.
Is that a great question? I don't know if that's a great question, but thank you.
It's a great question.
It's a question.
It's a funny question. It had a punchline, so I consider that a great question. All right. I think that it's just a case of when I got on Twitter at that, you know, in 2009, when mm-hmm. Twitter was a much different, nicer, more fun place. Somehow just a lucky series of events of people saying, hey, follow this guy, you should follow this guy, and somebody who had, you know, a lot of followers would say it, and so I somehow amassed all these followers, but I had no illusions that they would ever do anything I say. So when I tweet like, hey, I'm on Instagram now, guys, this idea that like en masse everyone's gonna go over there, like 7 people per tweet like do anything anymore. All right.
Well, it is funny the difference between like certain stand-ups, stand-up comics, certain musicians, they could start a riot online if they wanted to.
Yes.
And then some cannot. And I'm one of the on the latter side as well. Like, they're not going to listen to anything I fucking say. They don't give a shit.
No, okay. I'll never be the leader of a cult. Like, no one, if anything, they do the opposite of what I say on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's a charisma issue that I have.
Yes. I think so. We're all around. I agree with you for all of us. So now, this podcast, which it's basically the way you describe it is, it's a podcast on writing for writers that hate writing. Is that a fair way to assess it?
Fucking great tagline.
yeah. It's a mouthful that it took me a while to even get to say right. But that was the loosest of structures. It's basically an excuse for me and Julia Sharp, who's AKA John Goldblatt, who I've known for a long time and think is hysterical. It's just an excuse for us to joke around.
And you did it out of the pandemic, out of boredom, I'm guessing, or out of, because, you know, just that's what a lot of people did.
Yeah. Well, actually, our producer, JC Brooks, who's, I gave you full credit for including all 3 of her names.
I'm trying to be very, it's part of my charisma.
Yeah. She's the center. There it is. Magnetic. by the way, it's distracting me. So let me get this out of the way. You've been told Stallone, right?
Me? Really? Yeah. No.
Oh,
never.
He'll take that.
Oh, my God.
He'll take that.
Wait,
my stars.
But keep talking, because there's somebody else in there.
Frankenstein. Too. Frankenstein is what I get a lot because of my big deep voice.
I can see that as a joking way, but it's not realistic. Like, there's the guy.
But you're saying Frankenstein isn't real? What the fuck?
There's that guy in Sopranos season 2. I don't know if you watch The Sopranos.
You know, it's funny that we had Michael Imperioli on the show a couple years ago. And my opening line to him was, I got to be honest, I've never seen a single episode. And his response was, you should check it out. People seem to like it. So I haven't done that, though. But Big Pussy did want to start a fight with me. He did the show also. He hated me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I have no idea why.
All right. Well, anyway, it'll come to me halfway through this, who else you look like.
I have never heard Stallone.
Never?
What year Stallone are we talking?
I mean, you look like, you know what it is? You look like in the parking lot of a carnival, how somebody would draw Stallone.
Oh, okay. That seems more on brand. That seems far more on brand. Thank you for that.
All right. Now I got
you ordered to die. I'm like the Wish version of Stallone, like that thing.
Yeah. Well, Stallone could bench press Ralph easy, and Ralph can't bench press a microphone.
That's true.
Ralph is, I will give Ralph credit. He is 2 Stallones height wise.
Yeah. I'm almost 6'6", my friend. I'm a big dude.
6'6", did you hoop?
No, I am very white.
Here are some caricatures of Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's right. I can see that. There I am. Oh, my God. It's like looking into a mirror.
It looks like if you were constipated.
Oh, you know, Shanna, in the bottom, there's one over there. That's all right. Doesn't matter. When I saw one that looked a little bit more like me with a beard, but no worries.
This one?
Yeah, right there. Except I'd never wear a suit. That's the problem. But anyway, to go back to the podcast,
yes.
It came out during the pandemic. It was to cure boredom.
to yeah, a little bit of that. And also the J.C. Brooks, who's our producer, is a sound engineer on Family Guy. Okay. And so I work with her all the time doing recording other people. And she just one day was like, you know, you should do a podcast. You want to do that? And I had been talking to Goldie about doing that. So she lit the fire, because we wouldn't have done anything technically. Like, I suck right. at all that stuff. And even a simple podcast is incredibly daunting to me.
Yeah, so, it's funny. Like Bill, by the way, his computer microphone was not working for months. And I literally went and pushed one button and it worked. Some people are just don't have that skill set.
There was more to it than that. Yeah,
there was not any more to it.
But I will say, and especially with your producer, first of all, I very much like, she has a very calming voice. Totally. But she's like, she's such a specifics girl too, that if you guys like say you like you're referencing dads, you yeah. guys will just go right into dads. And she's like, let's set the stage here for those that might not know. Like, she's very good. I very much appreciate that, because I need yeah. that stuff too.
And let's be honest, she's like our laugh track. She's a great laugher.
Yes.
Laughs all
great
the time.
Laugh.
Do you think that now that, I mean, God willing, we're on the other side of this craziness yeah. and that I'm Family Guy is now, I know a lot of it was recorded remotely, the VOs and stuff, but do you think that the podcast will survive a reopening of society, or it will go the way of the pandemic where it might just kind of disappear?
Well, you know, who can say? I know that Goldie is, I find him hilarious, but he's quite volatile. So, you know, I don't know if suddenly having a lot of free time, he's going to say like, dude, I'm surfing 5 hours a day. Goodbye podcast. But I hope it keeps going. For me, life pre and during the pandemic is like altered about 3%. Oh, like, I love staying at home and doing nothing. So, you know, it's.
And apparently catching all your dreams while you sleep is the main focus of your day.
I mean, my wife said like in this room, do you want something on the wall? No. That she comes back with this instantly.
At least all your dreams are safe. Your dreams are safe.
This camera is not selling it. It's roughly the size of, you know, when the fire department, someone's going to jump out of a second floor window. That's kind of the size of it. It's so unsubtly huge.
So I wanted to jump forward a little bit, or jump back rather. But so go to after Family Guy was canceled, the original run, right? Yep. I was fan day one. I never watched the Super Bowl, but I forgot who played that year. And they played the first Family Guy after the Super Bowl, whatever fucking year that was, right? Yep. And I was a fan. I was a fan day one, right? Watched it till it got canceled, would talk to people about it. And I was one of the first people to buy that DVD when it came out. So you're welcome for your career. I take personal, you know, on that. But then you're working on a show. I don't even, the Pits, which I've never even heard of that show, but whatever. Yeah. With Seth, and he mentions, "Hey, it might get picked up again." You barely know each other, and you get a job with the dude.
Totally.
That seems like total craziness.
Oh, I worked my charm magic on this guy like nothing you'd ever believe. No, we you know, we're similar. We're the same age, basically. He's like 10 months younger than I am. Mm-hmm. And so on this other show, The Pits, it had the greatest writing staff. Like, it was one of those shows where, like Dad's, it was so much fun in the writer's room. And then what happened on television was just like objectively awful. So in The Pits, like, we were loving this writer's room. It was all Simpsons guys and Seth right. and Seinfeld guy. It was like amazing. So it was a great vibe in that room, and we ended up socializing more. And so I'd see Seth out more, and he loves doing karaoke. Obviously, he's got an amazing voice. And so I love that, although my voice is not great. And we would just bond there. And that's where he said, hey, they're talking about bringing the show back. And would you be interested in coming over? And I just didn't believe that it was going to happen. But of course it did. And then 17 years later, here we are.
It's fucking crazy. But now let me ask you,
didn't you catch it? 17 years.
That's why you had that over your bed when back in the day, and that's how it happened. So
that's right.
The question would be this, because you mentioned Dad's also. So Dad's stellar writing cast, The Pits apparently stellar writing cast. What do you think the secret sauce is as to why, especially doing a writer's fucking podcast, like why those shows with gold in the room
yeah.
doesn't fucking transfer to ratings or likability for whatever reason?
I, you know, it's funny. You can sit there and analyze that stuff forever. And there were a couple of factors that I feel confident in identifying and going into Dad's as to why it failed. Mm-hmm. One of them was, and this is no fault to us or no fault to him, but I feel like at that precise moment, America was suffering a little bit of Seth fatigue. Like we heard a lot.
Interesting.
You got a lot of, he got a lot of juice about Family Guy and the Wonder Boy and all that. Then it came back. But then Family Guy was kind of a polarizing show where either people really liked it or people hated it and didn't like the people that liked it. And then Ted comes out, and Ted is this huge, huge hit that everybody's like, okay, I like this. But that has a lot to do with like looking at a very cute teddy bear.
Right.
Seth's voice performance is obviously great. But then Seth does the Oscars, and those were sort of mixed reviews about that. People were like, I don't know if I want this guy to be a star or just a voice guy.
Right.
And then he's got his name all over Dad's, which he had nothing to do with. He can't take any blame for Dad's. He was nice enough to let Wellesley, that my writing partner and I, put his name in front of the show in a blatant effort to attract viewers.
Right.
But I think at that point, and then the fact that the show itself was just not that great. Like the room was funny, and I take complete blame for it. Like Wellesley and I were the ones choosing like what goes in the script. What are we going to do? What scene is it going to be? What's the whole episode going to be about? I think we were intoxicated, literally, but also intoxicated. Intoxicated by the atmosphere of this room, because it was a lot of the same people we worked with on the pits. Mm-hmm. And we love them and we love working with them. And when you're sort of trapped at Family Guy and then you get this chance to work on this other thing and it's kind of your own thing and you get to pick who you want to play with and you pick all these people who you love and are funny, but you sit around giggling and like doing bullshit instead of like really focusing. Like we didn't really feel like we had there wasn't much of like pressure somehow. We knew right. The show was going to go on. We knew they were going to push it big. It was just up to the audience to like it, and they did not. And, right. You know, I feel like I could talk for 10 hours about like what kind of all the different mini off the rails moments along the way.
All right, before we go any further, if you are an auto mechanic, a super cool do-it-yourself guy, or just someone who works on their own cars, basically none of those things are me. You probably know that. I'm a goofy city boy. I want to tell you about rockauto.com. They are the online store with every auto part you could possibly need at the best possible prices. It's your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. rockauto.com has been in business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order the parts, don't know really what you're looking for. After all the hassle, you have to deal with storefront markups. None of it is worth it. Just go to rockauto.com. It's easy. You'll find everything you need, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just some dude working on your car, or chick working on your car. It's 2021, for God's sakes. Everyone has access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. This is how sure they are that they have the best possible prices. There's no promo code needed. You just go, you buy what you want to buy, you'll find it immediately. But when you do purchase something at rockauto.com, tell me you heard about them on the SDR show. Let's get back into it.
I remember you're saying this right now about Seth Overload. And I don't remember what TV show it was, but he had like one scene in a show like he had been on just to get like one acting line in. It was around that time. And I remember thinking that like, okay, they're really pushing this dude now to be front and center. I remember that feeling. So maybe that was, it was just an ill-fated timing.
I think so. And I think that also had a lot to do with why the A Million Ways to Die in the West, the Western, what didn't do great. Like I
thought it was hilarious. You wrote that as well, right?
You helped write that as well.
And I believe me, I think that there are a lot of really great jokes in that movie. And I thought it kind of got, you know, like overlooked, let's say. But I think that had a lot to do with Seth fatigue. And it's not his fault. It's just like people make that. It's like they have very few choices of who to have rammed down their throats all the time.
Right. So
it's like everybody can kind of get to like The Rock and be like, okay, I like The Rock. Like, okay, put The Rock in everything.
Right.
But then when someone like Seth comes through and he's sort of got this Northeastern, like, I'm smarter than you vibe. And he's, you know, can be charming and is very funny. And I think actually does a really good job in a lot of the stuff he's in. But I think people are just like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to allow this to happen.
Oh, and Alec, never discount America's hatred for people that are supposed to be behind the scenes being very good looking. Right. Yeah, America does not like that.
I also think, to be honest, it's something weird for me listening to Brian come out of a human. Is a little strange, you know, because you're so used to that voice. If he didn't use his actual voice as one of the main characters on Family Guy, it might not be as off-putting. It seems strange, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Like, I get that. Like, I think that, you know, he likes to identify with Brian, so.
And speaking of which, by the way,
he identifies as a Brian. Yeah.
The first time I heard your voice, Alec, I'm like, oh, it's Jesus.
Right. Yep. That's right. They put the Jew in there. That was a good move.
And that, by the way, you could tell that Seth is a big advocate of writers getting voices on the show.
God bless it. Yeah. Like, it's great. Yeah, he feels, and I think he's right in a way that when a writer pitches a joke and everybody in the writer's room laughs, like, that's exactly the way it should be on the show. Mm-hmm. And so who better to do that than the person who actually delivered the joke?
Right. And most of yours are just your voice.
Most of mine are totally just my voice or some like Jewish-y alteration of my voice. Like if it's an old Jewish man or like Jew number three. Remember that episode where Peter's leading the Jews through the desert as Moses? Like I was one of the complaining Jews in the line of Jews.
Well, in Family Guy, fans are so obsessive. Have you ever gotten recognized for your voice?
No. Not that I can recall. No, I feel like... when we go to like Comic-Con or something, that level of fan, usually they won't say I recognize your voice, but they'll just know, you know, they'll be like, right. Oh, you play Jesus and you played, you know, whatever, horse number three or something like that. But yeah, no, I can't say that anyone's like, wait, your voice sounds so familiar.
When you said Jew number three reminded me, we had the main Jew from Family Guy, Johnny Brennan, did the show a couple of years ago. And God, I love that guy. I can listen to him do voices all fucking day.
He's so funny. Yeah. And of course, I think Seth, like a lot of us, fell in love with those Jerky Boys tapes.
Right.
You know, back when they were just tapes. And he loved the character that Johnny did that was most like Mort. You know, the guy calling about his shoes.
Yeah, Saul Rosenberg.
Saul Rosenberg. And all Seth wanted Johnny to do with Saul Rosenberg is Mort, and Johnny wouldn't. He's like, that, no, that's the Jerky Boy, so it's a little bit different.
All right. Oh, that's funny. I didn't even notice that, but that's, I guess, hilarious. It is a slightly different. And he was doing like pretty much every gay guy on the show for a while too, right?
Yeah, I think possibly his version of a gay guy voice might be lost to time soon.
Yeah, I think you can't do those things anymore. That's kind of what I wanted to segue into.
Yeah.
It is an interesting time now, right? So as I'm sure it was a big story a couple of months ago, you guys replaced who did Cleveland because he wasn't a black guy. He was a white guy, right?
Yeah.
And do you think it's a strength? Because part of the charm of watching these shows, whether it be Simpsons, Family Guy, South Park, knowing, holy shit, 20 of these voices are coming from three people.
Right.
Is amazing. But the way we're moving these days, it won't be that way. You'll have a full cast eventually playing each person. How does that transfer in the writer's room? How do you guys, like, you're just not pushing back on it, obviously, but how do you feel about not only from the perspective of black people have to play black people, gay people have to play gay people, but also from the politically incorrect jokes? You look at the storyline of Ida, which was only a few years ago.
Yeah.
You would never pitch that today.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right. It's interesting. You know, I feel like we live kind of in a bubble over at Family Guy. Obviously, we're aware that, you know, because we had to deal with it with the Cleveland situation. But we kind of live in a bubble where we feel like we can keep telling offensive jokes because that's what people expect of us.
Right.
And we use that sort of, you know, Israeli Iron Dome shield of we're an equal opportunity offender. you know? So we sort of say like, well, who's the dumbest character on the show? It's Peter, a white man. Like we make fun of him more than anyone. But in terms of like recasting and having to, you know, have people specifically play people and all that, I'm for that, I guess, generally. Like we already play fast, and like we've already noticed we've had Arif, who came in to do Cleveland, who's great, by the way. Like we have him like do little white characters here and there, and you'd think to yourself, like, should we be doing that? Like, is that now weird? And it's just that kind of weird, muddied line. What we have a guy, this guy, Josh Robert Thompson. I don't know if you know him, but if you have a minute after this is over, you should YouTube him doing Morgan Freeman, because he does our Morgan Freeman, and he's a white guy. And the Morgan Freeman is like, you wouldn't know it wasn't Morgan Freeman. It's so good. And we didn't even think like, well, should we have someone else doing Morgan Freeman now? We're still like, no, just it's going to be Josh Robert Thompson. Like,
so then the question, not to get like, you know, hot button political at all, but then if that's the case, like, then why the Cleveland? Why did you make that decision as opposed to any of the others out of curiosity?
Well, me guy.
I think that it was, say that again, Bill.
Well, I assume a lot of it is because he's the main guy, right? Yeah, most spotlight is on him.
Right. There's a little more spotlight on that character for sure. And also, you know, it was a moment in time where there was a trend, right? So actresses and actors were saying, you know, whether it's Apu or was it Jenny Slate and then Kristen Bell? I forget exactly who. They all kind of came out and said, we're not going to be voicing this character because we are not this character, and it should be a woman of color or a person of color. And you could feel that was sweeping through the animation world at that particular moment. So we had to deal with it then, you know. I don't know that maybe a year and a half later, there's obviously not that.
It could have maybe, like, if you guys were not in production at the time, it might've never happened. Is it a fair way to put it?
It's interesting. I think what happens is once the Simpsons get involved, like, you have to kind of follow suit or lead the way. So I think that in our case, I feel like we made the decision to recast Cleveland like a day before The Simpsons came out and said, like, you know, characters of color, people of color will play characters of color.
I don't think South Park changed anything. Am I right? I don't even know, but I don't think they did.
I don't remember them being in that flurry of announcements.
Yeah, they were not. I don't think they were. Somehow they're very shielded. I don't know how they get so epically shielded from everything.
And Alec, I'm going to piggyback, and I hate the phrase piggyback almost as much as I do put a pin in it. But I'm going to piggyback over what Ralph said with regards to, you know, having a race be the voice, blah, 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 with regards to, like, what is appropriate then and what is appropriate now. Now, you were one of the writers when Seth hosted the Oscars, right?
Yeah, correct.
And by the way, I pride myself in the fact that I've seen 3 Oscars in the past 20 years. I watched the fuck out of that one. It was so good. Seth was Ricky Gervais before Ricky Gervais was with the Golden Globes, I thought. So now let me ask you this, and I'm honestly asking because I do not know. One of the genius things in that thing was, of course, we saw your boobs.
Yeah,
and it was so good, and all the women were obviously involved, like the camera went to when talking of when we saw you in a nude scene. They were all involved, and they did a great reaction shot. Now, and I don't know, because it's like, if they're on the joke, could you possibly get away with that now?
You would never even pitch it today, though.
No, you couldn't. And you know, the fact is, I don't even think we really got away with it then. Even then, that started like that. There was an instant reaction to that, which again, I think has something to do with Seth being Seth. Like, if that had been somebody a little more, you know, if it was Seth Rogen singing that song, people might have been like, oh, isn't he adorable?
You know? Well said. Yeah.
And also, the converse could never happen. I saw your schlong wouldn't work because we've never seen anybody's.
It's very rare. It'd just be a shot of Harvey Keitel.
And that's it. Over and over again.
There's a hint of Tom Cruise cocking all the right moves. Just throw it out there.
Dial it back a little, Bill. You got a little excited there.
Sounds like a new
app. Let me ask you, you've been the showrunner, which is sort of like the head honcho, kind of, since 2016, which is six years now. How involved in the script process at this point is Seth? And I know you're like the guy that at the end, like, you might be involved with writing as well, but the showrunner gives the flavor of the show, so to speak. Yeah. Is Seth still writing shows as well, or is he too busy with other projects?
No, he's very busy with other projects, and he has not been involved with the writing part of the show. And what he'll do is probably once a year, he'll sort of reach out with like a suggestion for an episode with mm-hmm. just like a one line suggestion. And instantly we, you know, do it. They've been great suggestions. Like there was one a couple seasons ago where, or maybe three or four seasons ago, where Brian sends out an offensive tweet and has to move.
Great. Love that episode. Oh my God.
That whole thing was a suggestion. And he suggested we do one this year that we just did where, it's kind of similar in a weird way, like Stewie kind of gets into a Twitter beef with like a Taylor Swift type character. He's kind of obsessed with that sort of thing. But so he'll weigh in that way. And when he records the scripts, obviously, if there's something like he doesn't like, he'll let you know.
And he's doing it all remotely at this point, too, I guess, right?
Yeah. And he has a recording studio in his house. So like he doesn't have to go anywhere for that, which is nice for him.
Well, as you're one of the main blessed people that brought Ted into my life. And I'm wondering from your end, how involved are you going to be with the prequel? It's going to be like on Peacock or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the short answer is not that involved. They're going to be. It's funny. I would have loved to have done it. I would have loved to have been part of it because I think writing for Ted and, you know, young John in this case, like writing for Ted is just so fun. And growing up in the Boston area, it's like it comes much more naturally, you know. And I really love that. But what's basically happening is they got a really funny room of writers working on that now. I've seen the first couple of scripts, and you know, I'll just send it back like a half a dozen jokes or suggestions. But they're really funny, and I think that I think if you like Ted, I think it's just like you'll love it.
Wasn't it originally going to be like just the two of them watching shows and bullshitting on it, like a la Mystery Science Theater 3000, and then it expanded into a show, right?
Well, that's the interesting thing is you may know more about that than I do. So I worked on what you're just talking about, which was at the beginning of the pandemic when Seth had just signed a deal with Peacock. He came to us and he was like, wanted to do a Mystery Science Theater of Ted and Mark Wahlberg watching an old Law and Order, as we were, you know, like we were talking about. So we picked an old Law and Order and we wrote it out for, I forget how long, like a week or something. There were a bunch of us on Zoom just writing it out, and Mark Wahlberg recorded it. Like they did it.
Oh, wow.
So like at some point I think that will get released because it was really fun and funny.
It absolutely must. Yeah. Oh my God.
That I don't know when I don't know what happened. It was interesting, like, and interesting is not the right word. It was tragic, but we were writing that, and like right around then, George Floyd happened, and that was like so god awful. And I think we had like there were like one or two jokes from Ted or John when there was like a black character on the Law and Order, and it was just like it wasn't anything that was, you know, really hard or anything. But at that particular moment, like it just felt like a third rail of electricity. If we're going to make any kind of like flipping jokes about a black person now. But I do think even at this point, it would already be like fine and funny.
Right. Well, it actually leads me into a question, which is that for most of the run of Family Guy, you never really take political stances. For the most part, it's like you said, equal opportunity offender. But it was very clear on the Trump episode that you guys were an anti-Trump, right? And he's come out and been very anti-Fox. Yeah. Did either of those things affect the fan base or affect anything with Family Guy in general? Because I don't think they've ever taken a political stance of any kind, right?
Yeah, not really. I think we made fun of Clinton for being like a sex guy, but it wasn't really like a politics thing.
Right. This was a clear politics thing.
Yeah. Listen, again, you're in a bubble in Los Angeles, but we all just kind of unanimously thought that Trump was like a joke. Mm-hmm. And just like, and then it was like a joke that then became a nightmare. So writing that episode was, you know, it was fun, and it was our opportunity to kind of like just like dump out, okay, get out all your Trump insults now, because it's only going to be in this episode. But it was, you know, I thought that one turned out funny.
I enjoyed it, but I'm just saying, look, I enjoy it. I just, like, in general, I personally feel you're going to end up alienating half the country when you make any sort of political jokes, especially.
I think it was, you know, what's so strange, because that was in the first 2 years of his presidency that mm-hmm. our show aired. It was, you know, maybe in the second year. And even from now to then, which is now like 4 years ago, mm-hmm. there's a total difference in like the political climate, like where if we released an episode today that was like, fuck Trump, and, you know, was mm-hmm. all making fun of him, we would alienate way more people suddenly.
You're probably right.
Like, so many people have been activated now to be angry about that. Whereas even 4 years ago, I think even if you're a Republican or you voted for Trump or whatever, you weren't totally like, you know,
sure about it yet. Maybe
you weren't like violently activated, and you could listen to people joke about him. Whereas now it's like,
yeah, I guess that's true. All right. Before we go any further, by now, you know, these guys, they've been a sponsor of the show forever. Blue Chew and their chewables. God, do we love them on the SDR show. Talk about a product made for this show. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of erectile dysfunction. It's an online prescription service. No visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships directly to your door in a discreet package. You know about Blue Chew and the chewables because we've been talking about them for years on the SDR show. You start out at BlueChew.com. You use the code SDR. Your first month is free. You just pay the $5 shipping. The only thing you have to lose is weak and flabby erections, because if you use the Blue Chew chewable, those hard powerhouse erections are coming your way. You know what we love to say on the SDR show? Chew it and do it with Blue Chew chewables. All right, let's get back to the show. And now I want to get into one of my favorite things of all time that you are instrumental behind, which is the Blue Harvest Family Guy, right?
Yeah.
So first, on a side note, I heard you say in an interview, you don't know of any other trilogy that would work because you'd been thinking of one. Can I suggest, because it's a hot button one right now that I think would do so well, Karate Kid. You should do Karate Kid. We all know all three of those very well. Thanks to the series, it's back in everyone's mind. I think that would work as a three-episode parody.
It's funny. I feel like I love the first Karate Kid. I mean, I think that you can't nail it any harder than they nailed it.
Right.
To two and three, diminishing returns for me.
True. I guess that's true.
Two is like, okay, and it had a great song in it, and I was in love with the girl in it when I was younger. And three was awful.
Right. Yeah. That is true.
To be honest, it just kind of fell off.
But because of the newfound love of the TV show, I don't know. I feel like it would work. And it just, we all know all three of those movies very well.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, Lord of the Rings is closer, but we're not going to do it. It's like,
by the way, for the record, I support Karate Kid 3 because a buddy of mine is Sean Kanan. And he was the main bad guy in Karate Kid 3. Yeah, he was the bad boy of karate, if you recall.
Oh, wow.
And for the record, I condemn all of this. You killed it, Sean.
But now, so you were the guy that pushed for Blue Harvest to be an hour.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, no,
because it wouldn't have flown for 30.
Yeah, it really wouldn't have. But that's all because Seth said, you know, yes. Like he also recognized that, yes, this needs to be an hour. But yeah, that was obviously just a totally awesome experience. Like,
and in doing it, you met George Lucas.
Yeah.
Tell me everything. Like, first of all, I want to know what his social skills are like. I feel like he's on the spectrum.
He seemed okay, but I'm also somebody in those situations, like in the very few times that I've met somebody of that stature, like I'm very aware of, like, I just want to seem like I'm a cool, normal person.
You're seeing pretty natural talking to me right now, so it seems fine.
Right. Trembling. I mean, you know.
Did he watch all three with you or just the first one?
No, just the first one. I think we all would have been asleep if it was all three. But yeah, it was just the first one. And it was only when the first one had yet to come out. It was like the advanced.
Well, that's what I meant. I meant each one before they came out, I thought maybe he would want to see.
No, well, that's my joke with the, so the guy who wrote the second one was, is named Kirker Butler, very funny writer from over there. And he wrote the something, something, something dark side, mm-hmm. which is also hilarious. But of course, for me, I get like the red carpet, Lucas Ranch overnight meet and greet, George Lucas photo opportunity, watched the episode with him. Kirker got nothing. Like nothing happened. Like nobody did anything. And I always think of, I don't know if you've seen that movie, The Right Stuff, about the astronauts, but like
one of my favorite movies.
I love that movie. And so like the first guy, Alan Shepard, who goes into space, he gets a Canyon of Heroes parade through New York City. The second guy, Gus Grissom, who kind of fucked up and sunk the capsule, they just stock his fridge with beer. That's it.
I remember all his wife wanted was to meet Jackie Kennedy.
That's
and
it.
That's all she wanted.
That's it. Yep. Didn't happen. So Kirker is the Gus Grissom of Family Guy.
Was there any lines that George was against when you played it for him, or was he fine on everything?
He was totally, that was the coolest thing. He was laughing the whole time, and
wow.
he was, and we, you know, I mean, we were overall the tone of it was reverential and like,
yeah.
clearly we love this, but there were a couple little jokes along the way that sort of were like poking fun at things that were not awesome about Star Wars. And he was such a good sport. He laughed at everything. He said afterwards how much he liked it. So
my That's favorite line, amazing. By the way, it's such a small line in it, but don't get penis-y is my favorite line.
Written by Steve Callahan.
Oh, fucking love that line so much. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's not a Star Wars fan at all. And that was great watching it with people in the writer's room who didn't know Star Wars. And so we're watching it for the first time and had these funny thoughts that me having seen it 50 times, like I have no new or original thoughts when I, right. when I watch it. So to hear him say, you know, when he says, don't get cocky, don't get penis-y, that was hilarious.
Every time I see that, it makes me laugh. I fucking love that line so much.
Really, hey, Alec, good. You guys are such a New England mafia when yeah. it comes to the whole umbrella that is Family Guy. I know you're a Boston sports fanatic, which is redundant. Yeah. Please just, if you can, I don't want to get too in the weeds with Ted, but getting Tom Brady. And then explain to Tom Brady what the scene encompasses, yeah. which is a guy on and then a bear on Tom Brady hand job, yeah. his blessed spunk, and then getting him to say yes made my head melt. I was happy for you guys yeah. for that.
Well, that was one of those moments where I was definitely tongue-tied when I met Tom Brady. Like that was the closest I'll ever get to like meeting a Beatle or something. It was so awesome for me. And here's the simple answer to that whole thing. I mean, that's all Mark Wahlberg. Like Wahlberg, like, you know, and Brady were already
buddies.
Yeah. Golfing buddies or whatever. But Wahlberg was definitely like in the New England fan celebrity universe. He was kind of the king. So I think that Wahlberg really made that happen.
And he didn't initially kind of skirk at that whole idea of the scene in and of itself.
Well, no, I think, and don't forget, this had the benefit of being in Ted 2. So Ted was already a hit. So he knows Ted, and
yes.
he knows Mark Wahlberg, and he's like, well, this Ted thing was huge. Like, I got to go with it.
That's great. And speaking yeah. of sports things, did you ever hear from Bill Belichick about the Three Acts of God episode with that whole making him smile thing? Did you talk to you guys or never?
Shockingly, no. I was expecting a very animated phone call. We have another gag coming up in a future episode with it's a Bill Belichick Christmas album. And it's, I forget exactly the whole song, but one of them starts, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had some very explosive plays. Like it just kind of went from there.
By the way, you're dressed a little like Belichick right now.
I know. This yeah. is my hoodie casual. I got more Boston sports.
I lived in Boston during the Patino era. So it wasn't a lot of good Celtics games that I was watching.
Worst.
All right. Let's take a second before we go any further to talk about one of our newest sponsors called Zippix. Zippix. I know Jay loves these. If your New Year's resolution is to kick smoking, well, I've got the answer for you. It's called Zippix. Zippix has supported thousands of people who are trying to kick that smoking and vaping habit
with their sublingual absorption that gets you the nicotine quicker. Zippix comes in six awesome flavors. You can use Zippix anywhere. You're not allowed to vape or smoke. No smell, no smoke, no hiding cigarette butts, and it costs less than cigarettes. You go to Zippix, that's Z-I-P-P-I-X, toothpicks.com. Once again, ZippixToothpicks.com to start your healthy alternative to smoking today. Once again, it's ZippixToothpicks.com. All right, let's get back into it. I have one more Star Wars question, which is, since the merger, can you still do any jokes you want, or do you have to clear it through corporate?
Yeah, you nailed it on the head right there. It's impossible now to do.
That sucks.
It's really, now that it, you know, it's no longer a mom and pop multi-billion dollar corporation. it's Disney's. And it's made it so much more difficult, even though we're allegedly working hand in hand. We've now gotten them to the point where they said they would consider, like before it was like that we couldn't even submit requests to do anything.
Wow.
And now it's like they will consider something, but we better make sure that it's like, you know, great.
I hate to put you on the spot here, but do you have a favorite joke or something that got denied that you can't believe didn't make it onto one of the episodes?
Well, I have one that that actually did make it on, but it was like at the last minute was going to be denied because they figured out what it meant. They didn't know. And then it was like about to be released and somebody saw it and they made a whole big deal, but we were like, we can't replace it now. The show's on, you know. It was this one which I loved, the pedophile opera house. Remember that?
Yes.
It was like the
C and C minor. In A minor. Yeah, A minor.
Right. Yeah. we now present Mozart's The Magic Flute. Oh, in A minor.
Yeah. That's fucking great. Yeah. It's so amazing.
That's brilliant, man.
Okay, we only have a couple of questions left. We got to go to the first. So somebody's going to bang through a couple of rapid fire questions. So Bill, if you have any left as well, we got to get them in now. You built bridges with Simpsons over the years. Obviously, there was a whole crossover episode. Very, very famously, South Park harpooned Family Guy.
Totally, literally.
Pretty well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Was there ever a thought of doing not necessarily a crossover, but like some sort of zing back or shoot across the bow of South Park?
You know, that was Seth. Like, a lot of people would pitch stuff, especially around that time, like taking a shot back at them. And Seth always said no. Like, he just didn't want to engage. And, you know,
smart.
It's like 15 years later, who cares?
Right.
But at the time, like, I remember definitely wanting us to like take a shot at them, because I can't remember any specific shots, but I know that a lot of times we had ones that were, you know, could have gone in scripts, and Seth was just like, no, he didn't want to return fire.
And now I know that it's very famous, even at a documentary about it, that South Park only takes some of them a week to put out, but usually like a month or so. Family Guy, I think it's like a year and a half or something like that, right? Because I think it's primarily because of the different animation style, or the way you do animation. Has there ever been a thought to switch over to be able to do more immediate relevancy, as opposed to having to try and figure out, will this matter a year and a half from now?
No. Well, the short answer is no. Seth likes the way the show looks. That's one thing he's still quite engaged with. You know, it's important to him how things look, and he, in a way that I certainly don't, he can watch a South Park or some other animated show, Bob's Burgers, whatever, and running through his head the whole time is something that is bothering him about the animation,
about the way it's animated. That's interesting.
So he would not be able to watch Family Guy in any way other than the way it's animated.
And it's funny how stupid fans are, how they thought that when you guys killed off Brian, that you caved to public pressure when you brought him back three episodes later. Not that it takes fucking 2 years to write these dumb. This is how stupid people are.
I know. That was ridiculous. And I think it was not even just people. It was like the LA Times.
Jesus, it's so crazy.
God.
Dumb.
That's not good for print.
People are idiots. End of story. Now, what about this? A favorite episode of Family Guy that you were not involved with?
Three directors.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that's what you see. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was very funny. It had Quentin Tarantino style. They were all around the story of Peter getting fired. And it was like Wes Anderson, Quentin Tarantino, and Michael Bay.
Right. Where Peter got really jacked at the end and threw a beer through the robot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So I enjoyed that one immensely. And I like a lot of them. I find that whether I'm involved with it or not really does not affect my enjoyment of
because you're still, I guess, making decisions because you've been showrunner for so long. You still are going to be somewhat involved. It's not like you can take a total step back from this, right?
No, not at all.
It's pretty wild. And then obviously my last question before we go into the first, I don't know if you as well, but it's pretty obvious that Seth is a hairband fan. Whitesnake, Kiss, Rat. I even think a couple others get brought up a lot, either directly or indirectly, right? So he's got to be a hairband fan, or am I wrong?
Way off.
He hates them.
No, hates it. Hates it with like poison. Like he just.
Yeah, he likes Sinatra and stuff like that too. Yeah.
He likes Sinatra and stuff like that. Exactly. Like he does.
Well, that's obvious. What I'm saying is that because. I mean, I think Francine was a groupie for Whitesnake. Like I guess he just finds it funny.
I think that, those are jokes where he's taking somebody's word for it. He knows nothing about.
Oh, that's really funny. That's really, really funny. Even Kiss?
Well, I think maybe, like, here's how Seth is with music. We had a thing recently that called for him to sing a line from Freddie Mercury. Queen and David Bowie's Under Pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He had never heard the song in his life.
Wow.
What?
Never. And we were playing it for him to like do it. He's like, I've never heard the song.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't know how you can go through life and not just accidentally hear.
No kidding.
Did he know the Vanilla Ice version?
Vanilla Ice wrote that, the backbeat. Yeah.
He might even know less.
Wow.
I have one question if we have time.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, you used to date Sarah Silverman, which, by the way, respect, big time. And it was like right after Kimmel, right?
Yeah.
You're now by the way, he's now the third person I've interviewed that porked her. It's pretty wild.
I am so sorry about that, Alec. I prefer made love. Sarah Silverman was on David Letterman, and she talked about, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically her telling her mom that she's dating the guy that spanked her. Well, sir, that was the same time she was dating you. Yeah. Now I'm wondering what the feedback was, tell me everything from your reaction, from you talking to her, all of that.
Well, first of all, that story was not about me.
Oh.
I can say that with a, hand to God. I'm not a spanker. Like I'm just in
Jews
there.
Don't spank.
No, I'm not against it if you are, sir.
No, there's nothing against it. I mean, mm-hmm. I wish I were. I wish I were in some way excitable, but dude, it's more like I'm just in there I just want to get the thing done, and I like the end part, and then we're done.
Wow, you really are.
I've heard
by the way,
on a podcast about how uncreative, and I'm right there with you. How milquetoast you are.
I was just saying the way he described it. He's so obviously a writer. I felt like I was there. It was such a beautiful picture.
But so she brought that up to me, like when she was going on Letterman, she was going over the stuff she was talking about. So she told me about that. And like, it's fine. Like I think I remember hearing from an aunt who thought that it was me. And I was just had to be like, well.
So you realize what you're saying here. It was Jimmy Kimmel that was a spanker.
I guess.
It might have been.
Seems like a spanker.
I can see it. Well, and now with Sarah Silverman too, and I'm sorry, very briefly, but like, she brings so much of her private life into her stand-up. Was there anything that she wanted to joke about that did involve you that you put the kibosh on? You don't have to get into specifics, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I don't. I mean, I don't remember anything like that. I think that if she ever wanted to include something like as someone who's also in comedy, it would have been an honor for me to have inspired a bit of hers in any way.
I figured, yeah.
Because I think she's such a, she's, as I used to tell her, I said, Sarah, you're the best female comedian ever, which puts you squarely in the top 100. but if she had ever wanted to use anything that even a fight or anything between us, I would have been like thrilled.
Well, now I like your podcast as much as I like hers. Oh, and then very briefly, just
wow, a lot
possible,
of
possible
here at the end
idea
of the show.
For your podcast for a subject, how to play nicely with others. And you guys touch on this all the time, and particularly when you liked the fact that everyone knew that Dad's was going down, you guys joked about it. Working with others, whether it be in a room or just overall, I think that would be a great one. Like inner office dynamics, all that stuff. I'd be fascinated.
I know Goldie would go off on that because he doesn't like working with others.
Well, there you go. The yin and the yang.
As we get ready for the first, my two of my other favorite lines, I don't know if you wrote them, but when they're about to drown and in the safe room, and he'd say he never liked the. What is it?
9/11 gave me an erection.
No, when he says about the Godfather, it insists upon itself. I just love that line. It's so stupid, but I love it. And then, is now a line that you couldn't get away.
Seth's opinion, by the way.
Oh, that's really funny. But a line that I had to stop the show because I was laughing so hard was when Brian said he's up here having goofball sex. I had to literally had to stop it. Because I could not stop laughing.
Oh, that so was, good.
That sounds like it was probably Danny Smith.
Oh, my God. I had to stop the fucking show. That's how hard I laughed. It's only happened a few times in my life where I had to stop a show from because I was laughing so fucking hard. All right, we got to do the first right now, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We end every episode since the dawn of time with this question, asking about your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we mean the first concert you went to, ideally on your own volition, and hopefully something we're going to know, not some weird local band that we never heard of.
Right. Okay. Well, I think you're going to be happy with this. My first concert was Poison opening for David Lee Roth solo Skyscraper tour.
Love it.
Wow.
At the Worcester Centrum.
I fucking love it. See, now you're speaking my language, friend. Yeah, there we go. That's fucking great. You went because you were a fan of Poison, David Lee Roth, both, or a chick brought you?
No, I went with a guy, as I did to so many early concerts when I didn't have a date. I went because I was at that age. I was like 14 and in high school.
Sure.
And all of a sudden people were talking about concerts and things like that. I'm like, oh, I got to go to one of these. Well, what's next? What's coming up? And I loved Van Halen.
Right.
You know, so, and he's coming right off of Van Halen. So I'm like, I'll go see this.
I think we're all, except for Shannon, about the same age. I'm 50. Oh. I'll be 52 in a month.
No way.
Yeah. I'm 46. Yeah.
Jeez. How old are you?
I'm 48. You look much younger.
Well, you're being really complimentary tonight. Sylvester Stallone looks young.
No, you know what it is? For some reason, your screen gets bigger when you're talking. So I'm just have more time to like look.
Fair enough. Is that it? Maybe? I don't know, but I will take it. Okay, now the first drug you ever did, ideally after weed. I heard some story about you doing mushrooms, but something that comes into your mind.
Oh, after weed.
Unless weed wasn't your first drug, or if there's the stories better with weed, we're fine with that too.
Now it's going to be, after weed, that threw me off.
Because everybody's first is weed, 90% of them, you know?
It is mushrooms. It is mushrooms, but it wasn't, I've had a couple of weird times. Mushrooms are a coin flip for me. Like it's either
agreed.
It's either like figuring out the deepest secrets of humanity or throwing up in a trash can, like somewhere, in a flop sweat. So, but for me, the first time happened to be a good time, which was also a trick. Like, and I just remember scaling a fence at my college and getting into our arboretum, you know, all these trees in the middle of and having just the best time and figuring
your out. your little person story on mushrooms.
Oh God, that was not a good time. Oh,
that was a bad trip. Yeah.
I guess we saw the same one about the Third World concert. Yeah, that's really funny. And now, the first time you had sex.
Yes. Okay. So this was in a hotel, a motel, the Comfort Inn Motel outside of Augusta, Maine, and it was.
Okay.
With my high school girlfriend. It's not that exciting, except the exciting part was when it was over, which was quickly, literally the first thing she said was, "That's it?" Question mark. And I'll never forget that moment.
Well, so was she a virgin also?
Yes.
So she was like just really disappointed with the act of sex, thanks to Alex Sulkin.
Oh, did you read that as disappointed? Yes, I think we can safely say that. And also, I believe that in the subsequent semester of our dating at school, that she was also fucking a teacher.
Whoa.
What? Well, then.
So it was a real that's it moment for her.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so we are, as we are taping this, we are pretty much into the new season of Family Guy. I think we're three or four episodes in, maybe five. Yeah. I don't even know how many it is at this point. I watch it religiously every Sunday night. Just as we're taping this, last one was like one of the story shows. It was I forget which one it was right now, but it was not like with the standard opening. The film noir one. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just a fucking fan. Beyond fan. So thank you so much for taking the time out and doing this. Your podcast, as you mentioned, a typical disgusting display podcast. Family Guy doesn't really need plugs from us, I imagine. Is there anything else you want to plug while we go around the room?
No, you guys have been great. I appreciate you mentioning any of it. Hey, let's plug Dad's box set available on Laserdisc.
Okay, let's see. Let's watch it and see if we can figure out where Alec went wrong. All right, Bill, your plugs?
Oh, just morning at Compound Media with Bill, and even as annoying as I am, my co-host is hilarious and former Miss New York. That's on compoundmedia.com. You can't afford not to subscribe. And thanks for having me, buddy. Alec, I'm such a fan, man. So this is just a pleasure.
Thank you. So great talking to both of you.
Thank you, awesome. Shannon, your plugs while we're doing this.
Right, follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982. Listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have entertaining people from all walks of life come on and share their experiences with a bad date, a time they've gotten into a street fight, and any experience with the paranormal.
Now, usually we try and guess at the end of the show without our guest giving any clue if he does or doesn't believe in ghosts. As a fellow Jew, I'm saying he 100% does not believe in ghosts. Bill, do you agree, Shannon?
So he's done psychedelics, which makes me think that there is a chance. There's a chance he believes in some stuff that we can't explain.
Okay, so now, Alec, your thoughts?
I do believe in ghosts.
Whoa! Really?
Yeah.
It's because your wife's dream catcher.
You win, Shannon. You win, Shannon.
Yeah, Shannon won that, by the way. And Shannon, I think you were a little talkative this whole episode.
I would take notes. She's
here to take notes. Yeah. She's here to shut up and take notes like all women should. Pow! Now, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast on health and wellness called The Good Sugar Podcast that I do with the founder of Juice Press, comes out every Monday. Now that it's right around Christmas time, my book, which last year hit top 100, I'm going to show it right here, The 100% Guaranteed Guide to Weight Loss and Fitness.
Nice.
Chapter 1 is Eat Less. Chapter 2 is Work Out More. And the rest of the book is blank. Great gift for any friends of yours that has never lost any weight. You get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At I Am Ralph Sutton. Thank you so much, Alec. It was a pleasure having you. We're going to play Just Like Paradise by David Lee Roth since you saw that show. How could we not? Fuck Seth not liking hair bands. We're playing it.
Yes.
And we'll see you next time on the STR Show. Peace.
Listening to the SDR Show.